I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Hello, happy Thursday, or Friday if you're listening then. It is On the Clock. I am Ben Kenny on Phillies 24-7 and Sports Radio 94 WIP. It is our first actual in-season show of the season. So for those that stuck with us all off-season, we thank you. Everyone checking back in, I don't entirely blame you. And if you plan to go away for a bit again, also not going to be a knock. After a disappointing first week of the season, to say the least, the team is 2-4. They have one of the worst run differentials in baseball, thanks to the Braves. But for all of the buildup, and for all the talk, which we did it here too, of this is different, they're going to start faster, all of the stuff from last year's gone, spring training lines up perfectly, they're healthy, the team's good. You go on and on and on. For all of that, they come out dead flat, like they have for the last two seasons. So we're here to talk about it, and a lot coming up on the show today. Some bigger takes from the week, some stock up and stock down from players specifically. We'll get to that in a bit. Some stuff with the stadium and the scoreboard, because I can't go the show without mentioning that. And then some MLB-wide takeaways and storylines from the first week. All of that later. But we have to start with the games themselves. And I always struggle with how to package this, because sometimes there's a clear story of the week. Sometimes, because we do this once a week, there's a great series over the weekend. Then we talk on Thursday or Friday after a bad series during the week. You kind of have to balance that. And it is just six games normally of a 162-game season. So, I mean, one message today, honestly, I think where I'm going to start is we can calm down. Like, it's okay. The team's going to be fine. There are things I'm concerned about. There are things I'm somewhat angry about having watched all the games. But I'm not saying or making grand sweeping assumptions about the season. I think the recent history of the team, notably, has taught us with all, and again, it's the same cast of characters mostly, that they'll figure it out. And, I mean, if you're a Sixers fan as well, and you're in Philadelphia, and I know basketball and baseball are different, but there's the whole thing with Embiid, where the narrative is developed, he wins the MVP, another postseason failure against the Celtics last year, and now it's, okay, the regular season doesn't matter, what can you do in the playoffs? And there's a similar thing with the Phillies. When you lose in the World Series, then you lose in the NLCS. That, okay, yeah, we want them to win the division and we want a great summer of baseball. And the nature of baseball is that it's with you every night. So the regular season matters more. It's more of the experience, to be honest. But it's also about what they do in the playoffs. And what's happening right now on April 3rd and 4th in, 30-degree rainy, horrible weather, I don't think is going to be the exact indicator of what the postseason play will be and whether the season is going to be a failure. So, thought off the bat is we can calm down a bit. Big picture. Now, small picture, like there is a lot of stuff that matters. And that's how I think I'm going to do this each week. I have general things from the game. I have a note or two from each game. But the general, the sweeping takeaways are going to be the things that matter from the week. And that could be minuscule, like Ricardo Pinto, who we'll talk about in a bit. Or it could be bigger and more sweeping. You get the idea of it. But the things that matter, and number one, okay, why are they 2-4? I know a lot was made of the bullpen. And, I mean, I was pretty pissed off having to watch Connor Brogdon pitch, not only on opening day, when the game was already kind of getting out of hand, but then against the Reds in the first game of that series. Connor Brogdon should never have been on this roster, and I want to expand on that later, but the general message here is the reason they're 2-4 is not because of the bullpen. Like, Alvarado had a tough first game against the Braves. The Braves are also damn good. And Brogdon struggled. And, you know, the Strom gave up the double to Duvall on opening day. All those things mixed in. The reason they're struggling is that the offense has been downright atrocious. The offense that, and this goes back to the argument, at least Nola-wise, last year, everybody just freaked out when he would give up three runs through five or six innings in July. My whole thing was, it's fine. He could do that as long as he shows up in the playoffs, which he did. And the team should still be winning those games. Because when most of your investment, or a large part of it, is on offense, when Harper, Schwarber, Turner, Castellanos, Realmuto all exist, and honestly, when you let Rhys Hoskins go, then the offense has to be the thing that drives the team. But the story of the week for me is that the offense has been terrible. And they've totally come out flat and look somewhat disinterested and not locked in. And maybe that's time. Maybe it's the miserable weather. Castellanos is 3-for-20 with 7 strikeouts, and he looks awful. Like Diamondback series at the end, awful. Like totally lost. No hope of getting a hit up there. Alec Boehm is 5-for-21 with a double. Subpar. Not what you need from him. Trey Turner's 5-for-23. Again, pretty bad. Like, offense-wide, the righties mainly are the guys not contributing. Now, there are some that have, and that's the nature of it. Marsh has been terrific. I think Schwarber's been awesome. Harper, after the big 0-for streak, had the huge day against the Reds. But Johan Rojas is 1-for-15. Surprise, surprise. 0.67 batting average. He can't hit. He is worse than pitchers were 5 or 6 years ago. He's a total liability in the lineup. And Castellanos is hitting 150. Again, with 3 singles. He's done nothing. So, I can't get mad about the bullpen or any of that. With like the big story from the week is that the offense has been terrible. The Phillies are hitting 157 with an OPS of 488, which I guess are numbers that are better than Rojas's, but you know how bad that's been. With men on base so far. Those are their numbers with men on. They just haven't been getting big hits. So Marsh hits a big homer, and Harper goes nuts against the Reds. But it's been a disappointment top-down from the offense. Which, when I say, okay, 2-4 week, disappointment entering the season, because of how much anticipation and how much we thought everything was set, I was down at the ballpark Saturday and Sunday against the Braves. And I wasn't there opening day, but the same thing I think was happening. Like, you show up there and it's the end of March and it feels like a playoff atmosphere in that, okay, people aren't on edge as much and the importance isn't there, but it's the Braves. It's the start of the season. It is mid 20-year-olds like myself, meaning the demographic, not I was partaking in this, but like a big party scene and everybody is excited about the season. So the atmosphere is there. The Phillies didn't need to do anything in the offseason to bring that. Like, that's what they've built with the postseason success. And I understand losing 2-of-3 to the Braves. But to then turn around and do the same thing to the Reds with the same issues, with the bullpen blowing one game, and it's really just Brogdon, so that's not a long-standing thing. He's gone. That's fine. And needing, I mean, dominance from Spencer Turnbull and Ricardo Pinto to steal game 2 before then coming back and just doing nothing in game 3. Like, the disappointment is even more so because it's the start and because of the anticipation. But also, it's what the first weekend at the ballpark was. Like, this town is desperate for good baseball and desperate for a good start to not have them go down 15 games in the first 2 months. And it looks like now they're just not going to deliver on that. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if this is a full month thing. Which, when we talk about the schedule that was surprisingly easy, which then means only that later it's going to be hard, so you get the easier games off the bat that would be good if you wanted to start fast. Well, they just lost 2-of-3 to the Reds. They get the Nationals next. They should beat them, but who knows? Then they get the Cardinals, right? Like, all of these games suddenly look less easy if the team is going to be unable to hit and looks the way that they do. So that's the frustration from the first week. That's where I come away. There is some good, because we're trying to project to the future here. The good is that Zach Wheeler is, as advertised, dominant, all the descriptors you need. Dominant versus Atlanta. I thought he was really good against Cincinnati. Some bad luck hits. Like, he struck out 10 or 11. You'll take that every time. No run support. The starting rotation in general, I think a big story from the first week, the bad is the hitting, and we can put that aside for a second. A massive story from the first week is this rotation looks to be established and set up perfectly for the year, except for Aaron Nola, which we will address, but he was terrible. Wheeler's amazing. Ranger Suarez, I thought, looked pretty good his first outing. Gave up a weird, doinky home run to Albies and then settled down. 3 runs in 5 innings against the Braves. Again, not that bad. With 7 strikeouts. He's missing bats. A lot of them were looking as well, but I thought he looked great. And then Chris Sanchez, I thought, looked spectacular as well. So Wheeler, Skip Nola, Ranger Sanchez, and Turnbull, who, I mean, in his taking over for Walker, goes 5 scoreless, or 5 with 1 unearned run. A big story from the first week is a 3.73 ERA from the starters, with Wheeler going 6 the first time, Sanchez went 5, Ranger went 5, Turnbull went 5, and Nola, even though he got crushed, went 4 1/3, with length. Like, these guys aren't getting pushed out of games early. And this is with them being pulled because it's early. Thompson said they're going to add length the next time through. But you're looking at, again, I think, the rotation that's going to lead the sport in innings, which is important when speaking of the bullpen and what that can do. Everybody looking as good as they did, I think, is great news. So you could weigh the bad with the good. The bad is that, like, there's a chance Castellanos doesn't show up until May. And, I mean, who knows with Turner? I don't think Turner's looked as bad as Castellanos. He's not chasing as much. He just isn't hitting. Castellanos is the one where it's like, dude, it looks like you've just no clue what you're doing. And that's the offseason is supposed to reset your brain from whatever happened in the playoffs. But it's sliders away and sliders away and sliders away, and he's totally lost. But if that's the bad, there has to be an acknowledgement that the first week was great from the starting pitching. And I'll call it great because I'm like, that Nola thing is not going to happen all season. I'll call it a great week. It's really as much as you could ask for because Sanchez and Turnbull are so unknown, and Turnbull takes over for Walker. And again, might have looked the sharpest of all of them. And Sanchez, 2 runs through 5, but 8 strikeouts. Those guys at the bottom of the rotation, if they're able, an indicator, I think, if they're able to strike a lot of guys out, then there's some staying power. They're not just pitching to contact and getting lucky to get out of innings. Sanchez, 8 strikeouts. Suarez, 7. Turnbull, 7. That is a fantastic start from the rotation. So that's the good. That is a positive takeaway. It's not only a negative show today. The other thing, like, the bullpen was shaky, which I mentioned. I'm not that concerned about it. Alvarado had a weird fluke bad game against the Braves to start. Everybody lost their minds. The guy was dominant his next appearance or two. He'll be great. I think Jeff Hoffman, I just ordered, actually. I ordered a Jeff Hoffman jersey. That's how in I am on him. I pray that they re-sign him so that it's not just half a year of wearing it. But I think he could be, if you're looking ahead to the playoffs, the high leverage righty arm. And that could equate, like, that could lead into closing. I see a vision. If the Phillies are to close out a World Series, I think it's with Jeff Hoffman on the mound. So I ordered a Jeff Hoffman jersey, and I pray. And I didn't get it off Fanatics, and I think it's going to be better quality than the ones that they're rolling out. But bullpen-wide, Strom looked good in his comeback after the thing with Duvall. I thought that was a mistake by Thompson, and I'll get to the game specifically in a second. But aside from that, it looked fine. Sir Anthony was shaky, then he looked great the next time. You're going to ride those waves with the bullpen. And is it the best bullpen in baseball, as MLB.com proclaimed? No. But I think we contested that as well. It's good. Part of the reason it's good is because the starters set it up so well. And it also is missing Kerkering, who, I mean, I trust more. Well, I mean, it's missing Kerkering. They had to pitch Brogdon, right? Junior Marte as well looked great against the Reds. So there's some shakiness. The Brogdon thing was a disaster. There's been a couple runs given up here and there. But overall, like, if you can get Junior Marte to pitch consistently and then you get Kerkering back and things start to look a lot better when you get into the season. So that's fine. And is there room to grow or room for an addition there? 100%. I'm not going to argue that. They only have one big righty arm that I trust, and that's Hoffman. Sir Anthony, I really don't. There's a level of inconsistency there. But it was a shaky bullpen week, but I'm okay with that. That's the nature of the first week of the year, I think. And remember, a lot of this, the pitching stuff, honestly, what makes it more amazing the first week was the fact that a lot of these guys missed some of their spring training, and bullpen-wise as well. Like the reason, well, one of the reasons that Taijuan Walker isn't pitching right now is because of that whole flu thing. It's the reason Kerkering's not with the team. So the week can be, or should be, taken with that context, which makes it more impressive. So, listen, it was a bad week in terms of results. I think there are some good things to come. Other notes, other things that matter, which is going to be our leading segment each show. And then maybe some, like, if there are pressing things from the games, I'll get to them. And I will with the Thompson thing. I do have a big critique of Rob Thompson. Everybody knows I love the guy. I think he's one of, if not the best manager in baseball. I think he had a bad week. And I'll get to that here in a minute or two. The other things that matter. Number one, and these are quicker hitters, Bryce Harper needs to relax. That diving into the camera well was ridiculous. And it's the same thing with Embiid going for loose balls into the stands. It's like, buddy, that out or that possession doesn't really matter. What matters is you playing. And especially that's the second game of the year. I was at the game, and I'm sitting up in the 200 level near right field. And as soon as the ball goes in the air and I see him running, I go, don't get hurt, don't get hurt, don't get hurt. Everybody could see that coming from a mile away. Like, just relax. We don't need you doing that. Just play first, and I think he had a great defensive week overall. Play first, stop diving, get away from the stands. Just don't go after those balls. It's fine. Let them drop. It's okay. So that's one. With the Ranger and Sanchez and Turnbull, great first trip through. Actually, I'm going to save this. There's a stock up when it comes to that, but that was another highlight. Johan Rojas, terrible first week. He's 1-for-15. Let me pull this up again. 1-for-15. He has 2 runs. One of them because he liked out a double play. One of them, I think, because he got hit by a pitch. They're not coming because of that one hit. And I don't know if that hit left the infield. Somebody that's smarter than me can figure that out. He has 1 walk, 4 strikeouts, and 1 stolen base, and 1 embarrassing, horrible pickoff. That's a 0.67 batting average, a 1.67 on base, an 0.67 slug, a 2.43 OPS. Like, he is as liability as they come. That's not a correct sentence, but you understand the message. Terrible at the plate. You are giving away outs by having this guy in the lineup. And that's what I tried to say in the whole Pache and Rojas discussion. He could be a generational fielder, and that matters to a point. It also stinks when you get to the 8th and 9th hitters and know that you could just get to the top of the lineup. Those are automatic outs. Like, you are handing away outs every time this guy goes up to the plate. So not only does he do that, he also comes in to pinch run against the Reds and he falls for an inside move and gets picked off. Like, you could not have had a worse first week for Rojas after, I would say, a somewhat controversial decision to keep him. All the fans are in because, oh, they love Rojas. But I think everybody that understood what was going on is like, yeah, you want him, you need him to get better offensively. Where's that going to happen? I would argue AAA. His defense is valuable, but is it valuable enough to put him in the lineup every day? And that's what Thompson has been doing for most of the days. And that gets us into the Thompson thing. Number one, first game of the year. I thought he made a mistake leaving Stroman to face Duvall. Everybody, I think, agrees with that. We're not going to harp on it. Those kind of things unfortunately happen. We are addressing that Thompson has fault in that game, but not turning it into a take that he's a bad manager or doing a bad job, right? The other thing, and this was the thing that irked me more, Sunday against the Braves, Chris Sale is on the mound. Weird side-throwing lefty that's lost some of his juice. He's throwing 94-95, used to be 99-100. Still effective-ish. I thought the Phillies let him off the hook. I mean, base runners on all day. Couldn't really get the big hit. Part of that is you have runners on first and second, and then here comes a back 7-8-9 of the lineup, of Sosa, Pache, and Rojas. You are just giving away the inning. You are admitting, just for what? For good defense and righty-lefty matchups, just giving away the inning if it ever gets to that point. So this is my problem, is that Sale was on the mound, and Brandon Marsh was not playing. Marsh, by the way, leading the team in like everything except home runs. Stott was not playing, who, if he's not as good against lefties, he's still a better hitter than Rojas or whatever they're doing. They put Merrifield at second, and what was it? Harper was out that day. So Bohm went to first, Sosa went to third, right, and then Pache and Rojas. And my problem is, you can do that stuff. If you're doing all of that in the name of, we want the best righty-lefty matchups or the best hitting matchups off their pitcher, okay, bench Stott and Marsh, which I disagree with, but do it. And if you care that much about hitting, then why is Rojas in the lineup? Like, that's where it gets a step too far. It's for the Rojas spot, we're okay with giving away an out and having him just be there to play defense. But with every other spot, we're going to care about the matchup and the guy getting a hit, which is flawed thinking. You are sacrificing offense on one hand and just picking when you're going to go and try to create the matchup, which, by the way, didn't work. Like, those matchups also are kind of phony when your replacements are Pache and Sosa. You're not bringing some prime Greg Dobbs off the bench to crush a righty. So benching Stott and Marsh, even if it was a planned bench, and I understand, if you're going to bench those two, then bench Rojas as well. If you want to go all matchups and offense and kind of say goodbye to, or, you know, put your better players on the bench, you have to do that with the nine-hitter because you're setting a weird double standard. And later in the game, by the way, obviously, Stott and Marsh came up, and they hit a lefty. Like, they still hit lefties. So that lefty-righty matchup thing was bogus. And if you're going to sit a guy, then why is he coming in the game anyway? Just a weird thought process and a weird execution. Obviously, that's the one game the Phillies won because Snitker fell asleep and left Bummer in the game forever. But I was really unhappy with how Thompson managed that situation. Now, the next game got better. Rojas was out. I think Marsh was in center. He was because, and this is the first Reds game, there was the triple, which barely was out of his reach, and Rojas would have objectively caught the ball, okay? I get it. He's a great defender. Then the next play, Marsh throws him out at home, and Rojas would not have made that throw. So it kind of evened out. But that's, I want to see more of Marsh in center, and Merrifield in left, who's been average, but I trust more than Rojas, or Pache in left, and Marsh in center, and Stott at second. More of that, and less of eliminating all the other positions, or swapping out Merrifield for Marsh and blah against the lefties and the righties, and keeping Rojas in. You just can't keep Rojas in if the objective is to put the best offensive lineup on the field. So hopefully that changes going forward. I think there's a breaking point that's going to be reached. Like, you don't want to kill Rojas's confidence. I think he has to be sent down. Like, the guy can't hit. And the only way to get him better is to get him at bats at a level that he can actually hit off of. He's 1-for-15 and just totally non-competitive at bats. Like, never stands a chance to do anything. So I would send him down. And sending him down, I think, would take this weird decision out of Thompson's hands. Because he wants to play with the, like, he's good with the locker room morale and, again, not killing a player's confidence. It comes a point, though, where you need him to improve, and he's not improving with what he's doing, and you need the team to win. So I send Rojas down. I'm good with that. He had, a horrible first week. And Marsh has been good. So that it should make the decision easy for the manager, day in, day out. Whether it's lefty or righty, I don't care. They need to let the good hitters hit. Especially given the fact that Castellanos and others currently aren't hitting. So you can't just pick and choose and go defense elsewhere. So there you go. Those are the general things from the first week that we will start with. I'm Ben Kenny. It is on the clock. At Ben Z Kenny on Twitter. Phillies 24/7 and WIP. We'll step away when we come back. I want to have a couple thoughts on some of the games that I have not yet mentioned. Just quick hitters. Then some bigger takes from the week. Some stock up and stock down from individual players. And we'll get on to some league-wide storylines. That is all coming up. Appreciate you being with us today. Again, it's On the Clock.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. It is On the Clock. I am Ben Kenny, Phillies 24/7 and 94 WIP. At Ben Z Kenny on Twitter, like the podcast and subscribe and things of that nature. Interesting week of baseball. I would say generally negative. Some positives to take away. I wanted to touch on some things with the games themselves. And I wanted to start with Saturday, where Aaron Nola's final line read 4 1/3 innings, 12 hits, 7 earned runs. I was amazed they kept him in for 4 1/3. He did strike out 3. He gave up 2 homers. He got totally demolished by a great Braves lineup, yes. Really disappointing opening start after the contract. If he was a free agent, and that was Blake Snell that just did that, we'd be losing our minds that the guy blows. I think we have a track record to assume Nola will be okay and that these things happen. Again, it sucks. I was there. It was horrible. I kind of, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt and we'll look forward and know that he'll figure that out generally. But we have to acknowledge it because this is a predominantly Aaron Nola show. I did tweet out that it's okay that the Phillies lost the opening day because their true ace, Aaron Nola, is going game 2. Didn't, again, turn out to be very correct. So that was horrible. And I have to address it. I'm not just going to ignore the fact that he got shelled and just talk about the good in the rotation. The other, and all of this stuff I wrote down is really just this whole platoon, Stott, Marsh, Harper, but then put Rojas in and then the lineup really sucks. My faith in Hoffman is through the roof. Feels like a future closer. And these are some of the notes. The Rojas pick off of second, which I, you know, the terrible base running. Travis Jankowski 2.0, if you remember from a couple years ago. That was the extra inning ghost runner on second. And Joe Girardi pinch-hitted one of his boys, one of the Ronald Torres, Travis Jankowski, just total Jag position players, which is funny because Jankowski just won a World Series. But at that time, he sucked. It was just let's just throw one of these position players out there that Girardi likes because Torres was a Yankee. And Jankowski got picked off a second like an idiot. Rojas, I mean, the same thing. Like, big spot in the game, pinch hitting. Just be productive and you're fast and that's why you're there. And then, no, never mind. You fell for an inside move. That was really bad. Connor Brogdon, bringing him in. So, I thought Thompson was a little bit white flaggy in the first game. That they just left Brogdon in there, who's throwing, like, runs are scoring on wild pitches and walks with the bases loaded, which is the most demoralizing thing ever. And I kind of felt bad for the guy because he never stood a chance to get out. And Thompson just left him out there. So it was a kind of white flaggy kind of decision and performance. I thought that was even the case with leaving Nola in forever. He just wanted length, even though the Phillies knocked Fried out of the game in the first inning. And you did get the advantage in the last game with the bullpen. So maybe that worked out. This Brogdon thing against the Reds, it's hard to say it was a white flag decision because it was the 10th and it was him or Nick Nelson. But after what anybody sitting on their couch, after what we've seen from him for a year and a half, but after what you saw in the first game against Atlanta, I couldn't understand, number one, roster-wise, Dombrowski-wise, why Connor Brogdon was still on the team. And two, why Thompson had to go to him. Like I saw this tweeted out that it's like a ball, you know, the ball will find you if you're playing left field and you suck. The ball's going to get hit to you. And I guess that happened bullpen-wise. But put Nick Nelson in. Easy to say in hindsight, but that's what we have. Putting in Brogdon there, I thought was a big mistake. Bryce Harper's 3-homer game was incredible. Like, Tuesday's game was the perfect, like, this is the beauty of baseball kind of game. Because Turnbull comes over, again, pretty good story if he pitches well. He pitched great. Harper, after being hitless entering, and everybody keeps talking about how hitless he was, yet, I mean, he's hitting the ball hard and just some bad luck. And it wasn't like he was Castellanos lost at the plate. But then he goes deep three times, including a grand slam, to give the save to freaking Ricardo Pinto, who last pitched in 2019, 5 years ago. He was last on the Phillies 7 years ago. 4 innings and a save. Like, the beauty of baseball. And apparently the guy was driving down, or had a driver come down from New York. I don't know where. And the driver got lost. And then Pinto arrived in the 4th inning, signed his contract, goes out to the bullpen, comes in the 6th, and pitches the rest of the game. Like, an amazing story. And honestly, he looked pretty good. Like, he looked better than Brogdon, that's for sure. That was an amazing, like, that's just what you get following the sport day in and day out. Is Pinto going to be saving games in the playoffs? No. But that's the kind of, like, the roster's the roster, and then there are 10 to 15 unsung, unknown guys that come back or come up, have big moments, and you'll always go back to, oh yeah, that day in July when, I mean, Lorenzen threw a no-hitter and his arm totally fell off and he was never the same, but also Weston Wilson came up and in the first pitch he saw in his big league career hit a homer. That kind of stuff is amazing. So, and I'm glad they actually won. And that's it. And Wednesday, I can't believe they played a game. Like, I biked 15-ish blocks to go to dinner, and it was a monsoon, like raining sideways in my face. It was horrible. I can't believe they played. So those are the general game things I have. Big story, the bullpen. I know I just did the Brogdon thing, and I've kind of touched on it in a less than organized way, but obviously one of the big stories from the week is the state of it. I said I'm not concerned, which I'm not. Kirkering's coming up. Brogdon's gone. They'll pitch better. There is a lot of talent there. As we said all spring training, there's a lot of depth, which we have not previously been able to say about the pen. The biggest question I had, and I just wanted to return to this quickly, because this is where I wrote it in the document, to be honest, and I couldn't go without throwing this in. How do you enter the season with Connor Brogdon and even like some of the lower level arms in your bullpen? How are they on the roster entering the season, and you couldn't pay a guy like Phil Maton $4 million? He goes to Tampa. Like, I know you have high hopes for Kirkering, but you couldn't go out and get one veteran reliever to just not have to carry a guy like Bellotti or Brogdon or these kind of washed up relievers that really are liabilities when you put them on the mound. Like, one of my big takes from the week, Dombrowski stock up because of Ranger, Chris Sanchez, and Turnbull. A 3-4-5 in the rotation that surprisingly is really good, or seems to be really good. Stock down on him because the bullpen wasn't deep enough to just one addition in the offseason, and it looks entirely different. That was a big disappointment. Stock up from the week, though. Big week for Kyle Schwarber. Terrible week for the Schwarber haters and the, oh, you can't hit leadoff people. That's the straw man voice. I apologize. But Schwarber goes 7-for-25 with 2 homers. He stole 3rd in a game. Notably, he was not clogging the base pass. He's going 1st to 3rd on Turner singles. He leads the team in hits. He leads the team in runs. He has 2 homer, 3 RBI. He's hitting 280. Okay, is it going to stay there? No. He has a couple singles, though. It's like he's a productive leadoff hitter. And honestly, he looks spry. Compare him right now to where he was last year. I think he physically looks better. So it could be a really big year if he already starts hot, because he's a notorious slow starter normally in a season. So the big week for Schwarber is one to note, and he's not leaving the leadoff position because Turner can't hit. And I know people want speed up there. Well, I mean, Schwarber looked kind of fast, dare I say. Stock up JT Romuto. He was 5 for 18. He hit a homer. He had one to the wall. It was a near homer. But when we spoke all offseason about what the team's going to look like and who I'm scared about, I was kind of calling for the end of JT, as in he might be over the hill. Last year, offensively, was pretty bad. And if he's just the best defensive catcher, then I'm good with it. But he might not be that great offensive threat. I might be wrong about that, because he came out, and I think he looks as good as he's looked in a couple years. Again, one homer, a couple walks, but I think he's hitting the ball really well. And in a lineup of high-paid guys that are mostly failing, Turner and Castellanos, to name two, he's at least looks good for the first week of the year. An easy stock down is Rojas. I also wrote Nola for the stock being down. Just surprising. I mean, surprising he stayed in, but surprising that it was that bad the whole time. Like, 7 runs and 12 hits is a bad start. The biggest stock down for the week, minus Rojas, who I've addressed and I was then down, is Taijuan Walker. Like, Spencer Turnbull objectively looked better than Walker did all of last year. And Turnbull didn't need to give up 4 or 5 runs in the first inning before finally settling in and being effective. The stock down for Walker, because he's still coming along and he's not there yet and his velocity isn't where the team wants it to be. It might be a May debut. Like, we could be talking about a month or 2 months for him. And meanwhile, Turnbull comes out and pitches as well as he did in the first start. So not to say Taijuan lost his job, because money matters. And if anything, they'll go to a 6-man rotation when he comes back. I don't know what they'll do. But, I mean, before, there was no other fifth starter. Last year, they had to do the Matt Strom thing for a bit. Now Sanchez has emerged, and Turnbull is emerging. So Walker, I think his stock is plummeting at the moment. So, all right, that is most of the stuff from the week that I wanted to address. There's also this story before we move on to baseball-wide stuff. Castellanos spoke recently, and I apologize while I pull this up again. He spoke after the Reds game, and okay, he's been atrocious at the plate, but I'm going to defend the guy for a second, because there's one part of it that people are going way over the top on and are objectively wrong. Castellanos is having a hard time adjusting to the new scoreboard. That absolute atrocity of a big digital screen they have in right field. I think I spoke on this last week, but after being at the games and just looking at a sensory overload, as somebody in the golf world, I forget who, I apologize, said, a sensory blitzkrieg, I think it was Brandel Chamblee, of just bright colors and pointless, I mean, it's not pointless, they're paying for it, but just massive advertising, pointless stats in the middle. I mean, we're at the game, and a family member asked me, what's WOBA, and what's VORP, and what are we doing here? And I like, even if I could explain what those numbers are, and for some of them I can't, but even if I had the best explanation for what somebody's weighted runs created plus is, then there would still be no context. I could still say, oh yeah, that tracks a player's whatever. But then the next question is, okay, well then what's good? Like, we all know that if someone's hitting 280 or 290, they're having a pretty good season. We know that if a pitcher's ERA is near 3 or 3.3 or 3.4, then they're doing pretty well. Nobody knows if someone's WOBA is 0.482, how good that is, or what the context is. So that part is obviously an embarrassment, and I think everybody agrees. But the new scoreboard, like, he's getting bad jumps on balls. And I actually saw this. I tweeted this out when I was at Sunday's game. It's in one bad part of the new out-of-town scoreboard, and it's relentless advertising of the thousands of bad parts to choose from, is that it is impossible to see any fly ball near the wall. You're not talking about a mostly black with some digital lights, old former out-of-town scoreboard. It's like if you hit a ball into the sun, that big light blue obnoxious Hers commercial. And a player, I could see how that would happen too, because you look back, You're blinded by the, your retinas are literally hurt by looking at it, and you totally lose the ball, which I think I did. Any ball hit to right field, no clue where it's going, because as soon as it gets in the vicinity of the advertisements, you lose where it is, which is terrible. Like, that's ridiculous to add something like that to the stadium. Now, they're doing it for advertising dollars to pay the payroll. Awesome. Like, again, it's not my money. And if that's how you have to do it, okay. You could do it in a better way, though. Like, you didn't have to totally butcher that part of the stadium. I went on to tweet that normally it's a black wall with clear depth. Now it's an obnoxious light blue hearse commercial. Like, that's the message. So, I'm going to defend Castellanos. Obviously, you are adjusting to a new thing, which is part of it. Like, that just happens when you're adjusting to new anything. If you go play in a new stadium, then you're adjusting to what it's like. But, like, I'm looking at highlights, and, okay, does he get bad jumps on the ball? Maybe, at times. I don't know what it is exactly about the scoreboard that messes him up, because, like, you're getting jumps off of the ball. He's not facing it. From the stands, I couldn't see it, but I'm sure there's a part of it. It's like he's looking back. And it's like, oh, yeah, there's a big blue and red Hearst commercial blasting me in my face. So I don't think anything is going to change. I think, if anything, possibly could, just make it something simple. If you're going to advertise. Make it something simple and bring this advanced stats section and just make it out-of-town scores. And everybody's going to be happy. And you avoid all of the bell ringing, which I am doing. I am part of it. I think it's outrageous what they've done to that part of the stadium. All right. I'm Ben Kenny. It's on the clock. We'll step away. When we come back, some thoughts on the baseball over the first week of the season. And we look ahead to the Phillies and the Nationals coming up this weekend. That's next. It's on the clock. All right. We're back. Pretty much closing it out. It is on the clock. I'm Ben Kenny. Thank you for listening, as always, at Ben Z Kenny on Twitter, if you want to find me there. Subscribe to the podcast and all of that good stuff. Baseball-wide, fun week. The Angels are in first place somehow, as I should have pulled up the standings. I will now. They're bad, and, yeah, they're tied for first with the Rangers. Anthony Rendon is, like, hitless, and that's like the worst contract of all time. The Tigers are 4-0. Some bizarro world stuff going on. The Tigers and Mets are tied 3-3 in the eighth, so that number may change soon. But an interesting week. Some bigger takeaways I had. Rhys Hoskins is still a Philly at heart. Him fighting with the Mets was one of the more entertaining things I've seen in some time. And the only person who came out looking bad from that was the Mets. Because, I mean, taking a lot of things too personally, kind of like Jeff McNeil being bitchy in the postgame press conference, just not like growing up and accepting that he slid hard and moving on. And then he totally destroys the team the next day, and they throw behind him after he's 3-for-3 with a homer and a double. Like, obviously, soft, soft stuff from the Mets, who, by the way, have started the season 0-4. That's subject to change with this Tigers game. The Marlins are 0-7, which is surprise. Like, 0-7 is, that's a lot to not win a game. The Pirates dominated them, which leads me in. One of the things I liked from the week is there are some fun young teams across Major League Baseball. The Pirates are one of them. The Brewers are one of them with Jackson Chourio. The Orioles are one of them, but they're a favorite. They're kind of a juggernaut. I put the Royals in. Like, Bobby Witt's playing great. Mikel Garcia, their leadoff hitter, third baseman, is hitting well. I'm in on what the Royals are doing. I love, actually, young teams that start to get hope because their young guys come up and play well. I'm way in on young, fun teams like the Orioles were last year as compared to, like, the Yankees with Soto and Judge and Gerrit Cole and a lot of these. I mean, Yankees, for lack of a better term. Now, you could put the Phillies in that category, and I would not argue with you. But in terms of other teams that I like to follow, I like the youth. I like the young, fun teams. But did the Phillies make a mistake getting rid of Rhys Hoskins? I'm not going to do that, and I'm not going to go there. The Juan Soto, he actually had an incredible start as a Yankee, and he's going to be amazing all season. He could be a Philly next year. I hope he does not resign there, because the Phils will, as we've talked about, probably go all in again this offseason. Other things I wrote down, the Orioles probably have the highest ceiling in baseball when everything's clicking. And Jackson Holliday is going nuts in AAA, so he'll be up there again going nuts soon. Diamondbacks have started well. I will offer an apology so far there. I don't think they're any good. No, they're 4-3. But they could be fine. Whatever. And the Athletics are an embarrassment. Like, probably the worst baseball team I've ever seen put together. And now they're going to Sacramento and leaving Oakland, but they're going to Sacramento temporarily. Who knows? They're an embarrassment. And that's that. It's good to have the sport back, honestly. Like, fantasy baseball every night, MLB tonight, things of that nature. Oh, that's great. All right, I have to fit another break in here, and that's what we will do. And then we will talk Phillies Nationals for a minute or two on the other side. It is on the clock. All right, minute and a half, closing it out here. I'm Ben Kenny. It's on the clock. Friday night, Phillies Nationals, Aaron Nola versus the guy the Phillies passed on to sign Zach Wheeler, and that would be Patrick Corbin, who has been terrible, and the Phillies should hit him. If there's anybody to get right against, if you're a righty, it should be him, but I don't know. Knowing this team, that might not happen. Saturday, Ranger Suarez versus someone named Irvin that I have not heard of. So, Jake Irvin, if he previously played on the Phillies, then that is unfortunate. He did not. And then Sunday, you have Chris Sanchez against Mackenzie Gore. I mean, take 2 out of 3. Or you need to sweep the series. You need to start building momentum. The Nationals do suck. They're 2-3, but they do suck. And you have this great runway. You can't just waste it because Castellanos and Turner don't decide to show up to the season. So what am I watching for this weekend? Aaron Nola has to pitch better. That goes without saying. I'm kind of watching for if Rojas gets sent down because, again, I would. But the biggest thing is, what can Trey Turner and Castellanos start doing at the plate? Because the rest of it, I think, will come, and I think we'll be fine. Harper will hit. Realmuto and Schwarber, it seems like they're going to hit. Bowman, Stott will be fine. Like, they've been kind of cold, but I'm good with them. They'll do what they do. It's Turner and Castellanos, and they kind of define the lineup. Weirdly, Castellanos hitting 6th or 5th defines often the lineup and defines what kind of day you have. And right now, those days are terrible because he is totally uninvolved to start the season. So that's what has to start this year. That's what has to start this weekend to actually kickstart the year. So there you go. That'll do it for us. We will talk next week at this time. Hopefully it is after a better week of baseball. But appreciate everybody hanging out. We will talk to you next week. See ya.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything and your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. Pretty much closing it out. It is on the clock. I'm Ben Kenny. Thank you for listening, as always, at Ben Z Kenny on Twitter, if you want to find me there. Subscribe to the podcast and all of that good stuff. Baseball-wide, fun week. The Angels are in first place somehow, as I should have pulled up the standings. I will now. They're bad, and yeah, they're tied for first with the Rangers. Anthony Rendon is like hitless, and that's like the worst contract of all time. The Tigers are 4-0. Some bizarro world stuff going on. The Tigers and Mets are tied 3-3 in the 8th, so that number may change soon. But an interesting week. Some bigger takeaways I had. Rhys Hoskins is still a Philly at heart. Him fighting with the Mets was one of the more entertaining things I've seen in some time. And the only person who came out looking bad from that was the Mets. Because, I mean, taking a lot of things too personally, kind of like Jeff McNeil being bitchy in the postgame press conference, just not like growing up and accepting that he slid hard and moving on. And then he totally destroys the team the next day, and they throw behind him after he's 3-for-3 with a homer and a double. Like, obviously, soft, soft stuff from the Mets, who, by the way, have started the season 0-4. that subject to change with this Tigers game. The Marlins are 0-7, which is surprise. Like 0-7 is, that's a lot to not win a game. The Pirates dominated them, which leads me in. One of the things I liked from the week is there are some fun young teams across Major League Baseball. The Pirates are one of them. The Brewers are one of them with Jackson Chourio. The Orioles are one of them, but they're a favorite. They're kind of a juggernaut. I put the Royals in. Like Bobby Witt's playing great. Mikel Garcia, their leadoff hitter, third baseman, is hitting well. I'm in on what the Royals are doing. I love, actually, young teams that start to get hope because their young guys come up and play well. I'm way in on young, fun teams like the Orioles were last year as compared to like the Yankees with Soto and Judge and Gerrit Cole and a lot of these, I mean, Yankees, for lack of a better term. Now, you could put the Phillies in that category, and I would not argue with you. But in terms of other teams that I like to follow, I like the youth. I like the young, fun teams. But did the Phillies make a mistake getting rid of Rhys Hoskins? I'm not going to do that, and I'm not going to go there. The Juan Soto, he actually had an incredible start as a Yankee, and he's going to be amazing all season. He could be a Philly next year. I hope he does not resign there because the Phils will, as we've talked about, probably go all in again this offseason. Other things I wrote down, the Orioles probably have the highest ceiling in baseball when everything's clicking. And Jackson Holliday is going nuts in AAA, so he'll be up there again going nuts soon. Diamondbacks have started well. I will offer an apology so far there. I don't think they're any good. They're 4-3. But they could be fine. Whatever. And the Athletics are an embarrassment. Like probably the worst baseball team I've ever seen put together. And now they're going to Sacramento and leaving Oakland, but they're going to Sacramento temporarily. Who knows? They're an embarrassment. And that's that. It's good to have the sport back, honestly. Like fantasy baseball every night, MLB tonight, things of that nature. Oh, that's great. All right, I have to fit another break in here, and that's what we will do. And then we will talk Phillies Nationals for a minute or two on the other side. It is on the clock. All right, minute and a half, closing it out here. I'm Ben Kenny. It's on the clock. Friday night, Phillies Nationals, Aaron Nola versus the guy the Phillies passed on to sign Zach Wheeler, and that would be Patrick Corbin, who has been terrible, and the Phillies should hit him. If there's anybody to get right against, if you're a righty, it should be him, but I don't know. Knowing this team, that might not happen. Saturday, Ranger Suarez versus someone named Irvin that I have not heard of. So, Jake Irvin, if he previously played on the Phillies, then that is unfortunate. He did not. And then Sunday, you have Chris Sanchez against Mackenzie Gore. I mean, take 2 out of 3. Or you need to sweep this series. You need to start building momentum. The Nationals do suck. They're 2-3, but they do suck. And you have this great runway. You can't just waste it because Castellanos and Turner don't decide to show up to the season. So what am I watching for this weekend? Aaron Nola has to pitch better. That goes without saying. I'm kind of watching for if Rojas gets sent down because, again, I would. But the biggest thing is, what can Trey Turner and Castellanos start doing at the plate? Because the rest of it, I think, will come, and I think we'll be fine. Harper will hit. Realmuto and Schwarber, it seems like they're going to hit. Bowman, Stott will be fine. Like they've been kind of cold, but I'm good with them. They'll do what they do. It's Turner and Castellanos, and they kind of define the lineup. Weirdly, Castellanos hitting 6th or 5th defines often the lineup and defines what kind of day you have. And right now, those days are terrible because he is totally uninvolved to start the season. So that's what has to start this year. That's what has to start this weekend to actually kickstart the year. So there you go. That'll do it for us. We will talk next week at this time. Hopefully it is after a better week of baseball. But appreciate everybody hanging out. We will talk to you next week. See ya.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, minute and a half, closing it out here. I'm Ben Kenny. It's on the clock. Friday night, Phillies Nationals, Aaron Nola versus the guy the Phillies passed on to sign Zach Wheeler, and that would be Patrick Corbin, who has been terrible, and the Phillies should hit him. If there's anybody to get right against, if you're a righty, it should be him, but I don't know. Knowing this team, that might not happen. Saturday, Ranger Suarez versus someone named Irvin that I have not heard of. So Jake Irvin, if he previously played on the Phillies, then that is unfortunate. He did not. And then Sunday, you have Chris Sanchez against Mackenzie Gore. I mean, take two out of three. Or you need to sweep this series. You need to start building momentum. The Nationals do suck. They're 2-3, but they do suck. And you have this great runway. You can't just waste it because Castellanos and Turner don't decide to show up to the season. So what am I watching for this weekend? Aaron Nola has to pitch better. That goes without saying. I'm kind of watching for if Rojas gets sent down because, again, I would. But the biggest thing is, what can Trey Turner and Castellanos start doing at the plate? Because the rest of it, I think, will come, and I think we'll be fine. Harper will hit. Realmuto and Schwarber, it seems like they're going to hit. Bowman, Stott will be fine. Like, they've been kind of cold, but I'm good with them. They'll do what they do. It's Turner and Castellanos, and they kind of define the lineup. Weirdly, Castellanos hitting sixth or fifth defines often the lineup and defines what kind of day you have. And right now, those days are terrible because he is totally uninvolved to start the season. So that's what has to start this year. That's what has to start this weekend to actually kickstart the year. So there you go. That'll do it for us. We will talk next week at this time. Hopefully it is after a better week of baseball. But appreciate everybody hanging out. We will talk to you next week. See ya.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.